Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Fenway Rundown podcast presented by Mass Live. I'm your host, Chris Cotillo. Today, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. You know, we've been talking about the Red Sox kind of nonstop. We heard from Sam Kennedy a couple weeks ago and Chris Smith right before the weekend about his impressions and our impressions of what the Red Sox, the big league team, have looked like for the first seven games of the year. But now we're going to be going a little west, talking about the Worcester Red Sox and starting to preview their first season at Polar Park. So excited to be joined by Matt Votor, our columnist at Mass Live, and Katie Morrison, who recently joined us to cover the Woo Sox. They've both been out to Polar Park, which I haven't gotten the chance to do yet. Hopefully that'll happen soon. We're going to talk a little bit about the Woo Sox for a few minutes, and then we'll hear later on Chris Smith will join us, and we'll talk about kind of a roster preview, what fans are going to be expecting to see once the Woo Sox start playing games, some of the key players to watch, some familiar names for Red Sox fans, obviously. But we'll start with Katie and Matt here. Katie, first of all, welcome for your Fenway Rundown debut. It's a big moment in your Mass Live career.
I'm excited to be here.
So yeah, I'll start with what your impressions are of Polar Park. You know, I know you've been over there a few times, and I know it must be a little bit weird being in a ballpark that's not completely a finished product, but what have you thought of what you've seen over there?
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, I think the first time I went there was maybe 3-4 weeks ago, and every time I go in, there's something new. It's crazy how much it changes from day to day. But my first impressions are, you know, I've lived in Worcester you know, for a few years now, and I've driven by that site that was a dirt lot, you know, a few years ago, and to see, you know, the park up and functioning right now is pretty crazy. You know, as from a baseball perspective, I mean, once you're sitting in the seats, you know, watching the players on the field, if you ignore the backos and stuff out in center field, it feels like, you know, a finished ballpark. It's pretty cool to see. But then once you go up to the concourse, there's still a lot to be done. But you know, I think they're happy to have a little more time to finish some things. But yeah, it's pretty cool to see it, you know, kind of take shape.
Matt, you were there for the first time, right, in the last few days?
No, this is my second time. Okay. I've been there, but a thing that struck me the other day, and I was there on a really nice weather day, is it's a nice place. It's going to be a nice place to watch a baseball game. They'll figure out the concessions and all the other stuff that's still going on. I don't know what the status of restrooms or any of that is, but when you're sitting in the seats in the park, and I watched a little bit sitting down below on the first baseline, and then I sat a little bit up above behind the plate. It's a nice place to watch a game. It will be, I think, a really kind of enjoyable experience for people to see baseball up close.
And just, can you tell, I know it's kind of in a unique spot, but does it feel to either one of you like Worcester's starting to embrace this, that excitement's building, any of that?
Well, certainly when you look at the fact that they specifically set a cap for the number of full season tickets they were going to sell, because they didn't want the only people to be in the park to be season ticket holders, which might have happened had they put them all out that way, but they they capped it and they sold every one of them. So it certainly seems like that there's some excitement on that. And just from people I know that are baseball people, they ask me if I've seen it, and they talk about looking forward to seeing it. So I do think there's a buzz. I think the sort of uncertainty of how many people are they going to let in. And so I think when things are normal enough that they can just open the doors and fill every seat, I think is when people will really be excited, because I think there will be a perception at the beginning that people aren't sure if they can get tickets because mm-hmm. they're not sure about capacities and so forth. But I think when things are free to go, I think it's going to be a very popular product.
I would just add to that, you know, the whole area around the park is really starting to, buzz with anticipation. I mean, Kelly Square, that whole area has been revamped, the Canal District. It really is starting to feel like an area where, you know, they have the idea that for Saturday games, they'd be at, they'd be in the afternoon, and then you'd have people go out to the restaurants in the area afterwards. And I really feel like it's starting to become like an area where a lot is going to be happening. You know, we hear a lot about like the Worcester Renaissance or whatnot. And I really feel like, you know, there's a different buzz around the area now than, even just a year or two ago.
I think it's interesting. Like a friend of mine, Josh Maurer, is the play-by-play guy for the Worcester Red Sox. And he hadn't spent a ton of time in Worcester before this. He had been at Pawtucket with the team as well. And I grew up in Westboro and spent plenty of time in Worcester. And Worcester was kind of dingy for a long time. And so to listen to him talk about now that he's moved to Worcester, about being kind of excited to try this place and that place and so forth, and really kind of feel like he's going to be in a fun neighborhood and have fun things around him. People didn't talk about Worcester like that for a long time, so the fact that they are is I think encouraging. And as somebody that's been a Central Mass guy, you know, for a lot of my life, it's kind of fun to see.
Yeah, I remember everybody at home that Westboro is in fact the lesser borough, and that is something that we always need to point out when Matt brings it up.
I like the Chris when he starts talking about something Central Mass related, you can start to hear the Central Mass accent show up a little bit, which isn't normally part of his thing. But all of a sudden, we're talking about the Worcester Red Sox a little bit more with Chris today, which
that's how you say it. So we're generating buzz. Obviously, the schedule changed significantly for this team. It was supposed to start already, and now it's been pushed back a month. The home opener at Polar Park is going to be on May 11th against Buffalo. So Katie, from your understanding, would this park have been completely ready if they had to start like last week? Because it doesn't seem like it.
I don't think so. I think that they're very what's the word? I don't know. It was kind of serendipitous that this happened this way. I think their focus at the end of March the end of March was to make sure all of the baseball facilities were ready. So the clubhouse, the weight room, the dugouts, the field. So, you know, that those areas are definitely, they look baseball ready. But concession stands, I mean, it's still a hard hat area. Obviously, this past year has presented plenty of challenges, but I think they're probably happy that they have been able to get the field up and ready and welcome players to a nice new park. And they'll worry about the rest. They'll cross that bridge when they get to it, I think.
I'm wondering how they changed the agenda or the schedule when they realized things slowed down. Like, would they have been able to play a game in Polar Park on April 4th? Maybe. Like, or would they, or April, like, what, I guess 11th would have been the home opener, I think.
But, yeah.
Would they have been able to do that with not all the amenities in place? Perhaps. I wonder if it has slowed down a little bit by design because it could.
Matt, do you have any, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, but have they set what they expect the capacity to be when they open up?
I'm guessing, this is speculation, I'm guessing it'll be whatever if the state says 12%, the same way it is at Fenway and in the Garden, mm-hmm. It'll be 12% at Polar Park. I don't imagine it would be less than that. I think from a financial standpoint, I think they're probably eager to, and you figure a month from now we're that much more vaccinated as a state, as a community, yeah, as a country, that it's, I would guess that that it's either 12% or whatever the state has reset the number to. I think they will be at the same number.
Yeah, Sam Kennedy on here a couple weeks ago said that the expectation would be in May that they'd raise the cap at Fenway, maybe 25%. So I think that's definitely a possibility for Worcester. Kind of to wrap up, during Katie, you've seen a few of the Sim games, and obviously there's stuff going on over there. I know you haven't gotten the opportunity to talk to players at this point, and that's coming hopefully in the next couple weeks, but have you gotten any sense of how players and coaches and those types of people have started enjoying the transition to Worcester?
Yeah, I think that the general sense is that they are happy to, you know, have these new facilities. Obviously, McCoy was a pretty old ballpark, and yeah, you know, it's also that I was there for the first home run. I don't know if we want to call it that since there are no
fans, that's history. We'll count.
Yeah, it is. It is what it is. And I mean, these guys were aware of it. You know, they were like, oh, hey, first home run at Polar Park. And, you know, they're into it. I feel like they, you know, as time goes on, especially as they can get more involved in the community, like these guys will be eager to kind of you know, join the Worcester community. It's a little tough right now, obviously, but right. Yeah, I think they're happy to be here, and we're happy to have them.
Matt, your impressions on that?
Yeah, I spoke to Paul Abbott, for the pitching coach, for a little while yesterday, about just kind of what it is, and he seemed to think the guys appreciated both being in a new park and then kind of figuring it out. Like, how is this park going to play? How's it going to be from an offensive standpoint, from a defensive standpoint? And he said that there's some added energy this year compared to last year a little bit, because they know there's games on the other end of it. Last year, I think mm-hmm. they knew from the beginning that there probably wasn't going to be a full, you know, there wasn't going to be a season. And,
right.
and so I think there's some excitement. I think there's some spirit, and so the fact that everything is new and happening at the same time, I think they're excited about it, and I think that will translate to people being excited about it as well.
That's Matt Votor. That's Katie Morrison talking about Polar Park and the Woo Sox. On the other end of this break, we'll have Chris Smith coming and doing what he does best, previewing a minor league roster. So thanks, guys, for hopping on. We're back with part two of our first Woo Sox pod on the Fenway Rundown, and we have Chris Smith, my co-beat writer at Mass Live, joining us. He's very excited for baseball in Worcester, like a lot of other people, because he is the type of guy that loves to go watch prospects, and it'll make it a little easier now that they are right in central Massachusetts. So, you know, we just heard from Katie and Matt about Polar Park, about kind of the preparation that's underway there in Worcester, and now we're going to hear from Chris about some of the players who actually are going to be there during the season. So obviously injuries can change this in the next couple of weeks. If anybody gets called up to the Red Sox, this could change a little bit, but generally these are the guys that you're going to see in Worcester this season. And Chris, I'll say, just speaking generally, I think it's a pretty exciting group. A few prospects, a few major league veterans, a bunch of players who, if you followed the Red Sox last year, unfortunately they're AAA caliber players who were in the majors, and now they're kind of back to AAA where a lot of them belong. So a lot of recognizable names in this roster, and I think a lot of talent.
Yeah, I mean, you got Jeter Downs, who's the, you know, number two prospect in the system. You know, the guy that they got for Mookie Betts. You've got Jaron Duran, who everybody knows about, really good speed, and he added power. So Yeah, I mean, then there's obviously Tanner Houck and Connor Stiebold. Tanner Houck, a lot of people think he should be with the Red Sox and not down at the alternate site after his four awesome starts, you know, to his major league career. And then, you know, Connor Stiebold's an interesting guy who's throwing harder. You know, at spring training, he's the guy that they got for with Nick Pivetta for Brandon Workman and Heath Ember.
So let's just take it position by position, keep it simple, and start with the pitchers. Obviously, you know, the headliner of this group is Tanner Houck. He's a guy that, you know, we've now seen pitch four times, or I guess five times technically in the majors, four starts and a relief appearance the other night. And he's been really good. The Red Sox still think he needs some development, so he'll be in Worcester. And then, as you mentioned, Connor Stiebold. So, you know, I don't think that Houck is going to be in Worcester long. That's my prediction. I think, you know, based on how well he's pitched in the majors, that'll probably be the case. But it seems like Stiebold's a guy who could anchor that rotation in Worcester for a little bit.
Yeah. So Seabold's best pitch is his changeup. But, you know, his fastball had more velocity on it. And, you know, and his breaking ball was, you know, better at the alternate site. So, yeah, he's an interesting guy. He was obviously traded here with Nick Pivetta, and he's a guy that we could see in the Red Sox rotation long term. You know, he really has an understanding of pitching. And that's one thing that Bloom has always talked about is, you know, since they traded for him, is his ability to, you know, how to get hitters out, how to know how to get hitters out, to understand what his pitch mix is, you know, to frustrate hitters. And now the stuff in camp, now obviously there's small sample sizes because they're an inning, you know, but he was throwing 95, 96 miles per hour. And that gives more separation with the changeup, which is his best pitch. So he's definitely a guy that should be exciting to watch. You know, he messes with the timing of hitters' timing. And he's just an interesting guy that could be with the Red Sox, you know, long-term in that starting rotation.
Rounding out the rest of that rotation, a few familiar names to Red Sox fans, Ryan Weber is there, Kyle Hart, Matt Hall, a bunch of guys that were, you know, the first lines of defense last year. And now, as we've talked about before on the show, they're really farther down the depth chart and they'll be in Worcester in the rotation.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I think that those guys are great and everything, but, you know, the two guys you really want to see is Stiebold and Houck. And, you know, an interesting thing with Houck is that, you know, they talk about how he needs to develop his split-fingered fastball, and that's why they're sending him to the alternate training site, you know, especially against left-handers, so he has a third pitch against left-handers. But, you know, he's been actually really good against left-handers. You know, going into that relief outing, and I'm not sure, I didn't watch that relief outing. I know he finally gave up after hitters were 0-for-19 against his slider. He finally gave up a hit against that pitch. Mm-hmm. But left-handers are only like, you know, 4-for-28, I think, going into that into his relief outing the other day. So in his four starts. So I asked Heim about that, like, can he get away with two pitches? Because, you know, Heim was with Tampa when Chris Archer basically threw two-seamer, four-seamer, and slider. We've seen Justin Masterson, you know, be a two-pitch pitcher as a starter and be successful. It's not a conventional thing to do, but he has used the slider to get left-handed hitters out. So, I mean, I think the important thing for Houck is to go down there and, you know, figure out the split finger, just throw it more and be comfortable with it, because I'm sure
he's only throwing it two or three times a game in his outings so far.
And that's, you know, and it's a pitch that he started throwing, I believe, later in 2019. So he needs to start trusting it more. As you said, there's Ryan Weber down there. There's Matt Hall. Some of these guys are your depth starter options that were, you know, in the rotation to start last year. Weber and Hall, I think, were in the rotation to start last year. And so they're way down on the depth chart now. I mean, you've got, you know, Houck, you've got Stiebold. You would have had Mata if he hadn't gotten injured. So they're way down on the depth chart as opposed to, even Andrees is ahead of them too.
And Whitlock, probably.
And Whitlock. So it's like, you know, so you'll see some of these guys who, you know, helped the Red Sox get a couple of guys to help the Red Sox get the fourth overall pick in the draft.
That's right. Yeah, and Brian Mott is an interesting guy to mention there. He's still in Fort Myers as he rehabs from a slight tear of his UCL. It's unclear, you know, when he'll pitch in games this year. If he does, I'm sure Wister will be a possibility for him. Moving on to the bullpen, there's kind of an interesting mix here, as there usually are in AAA bullpens, of some veteran guys. Hector Rondon, guy who is with the Cubs, the Astros, a few teams, he's expected to be in that bullpen mix. There's going to be Colton Brewer, who he's going to be up and down, you know, with the Red Sox, the Blue Sox a lot. He didn't make the team out of spring training. Kevin McCarthy, another guy who was in that boat, barely didn't make the team. Caleb Simpson, Seth Blair, a couple guys that they had last year. Steven Gonsalves. Steven Gonsalves, who they former Twins top prospect. Marcus Walden, a guy that was big in 2019. But the one name I want to focus on here is Chris Smith's favorite player, Edward Bizzardo, who is a guy that Chris really thinks is going to be able to help the Red Sox this year. He impressed at times during camp, and for now he's on the Woo Sox roster as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why he shouldn't be able to. You know, his fastball is, you know, mid-90s now. And he's got the best spin. He had the best spin of all the pitchers on his curveball in spring training camp. Now, what does that say? Well, you know, Colton Brewer has great spin. He hasn't, you know, had oodles of success in the majors. So you they have good spin and everything. It's not all about good spin, but if you're placing the ball and you're throwing it, you know, 95-2 with the fastball is 95 and he's placing the curveball, you know, that spin comes into play. And so, you know, I look at him as a guy that really can help out, you know, and I think down the road, he'll be a guy that will help out, you know, late in innings. You know, he's potentially an closer candidate with Hernandez and a couple other guys in the future. So yeah, I like him a lot. He works hard. He gained a bunch of muscle, and you know, he was down when coronavirus struck last year. He went to the Dominican Academy. He's from Venezuela, but a bunch of Venezuelan players went to the Dominican Academy to train, and he so they were pretty much on their own. They couldn't do set, you know, routines and everything, and he was pretty much on his own to do what he wanted. And you know, he really hit the weight room hard, and you know, long toss, and that's how you get velocity, right? It's like you see all these you know, interesting drills that for young kids now that they've got them doing. You know, I see it all the time on Facebook because Jeff Rye, the former Red Sox, always is kind of making fun of the different drills. But really, a great thing to do to get velocity is just long toss, and that's what he did. And that's how he added to his you know, his velo. And that's really how you build up arm strength. So, yeah, I think he's good. I really like him.
Another couple guys we won't go into too in-depth, but I just want to mention because this is contractually obligated when you have Chris Smith on. Mike Schworn, still in the Red Sox organization, and Bobby Pointer are also a couple names that have been in the majors that you know, are in Worcester and could be on the roster come opening day in May. We'll get to the catchers. Couple of veteran guys that are probably the first line of defense if something happens long term, I would guess, to Vasquez or Plawecki. Those are Jet Bandy and Chris Herman, couple former major leaguers. But really the intriguing guy here is Connor Wong, acquired in the Mookie Betts trade, as I think everybody agrees, the third piece. But he's a guy that the Red Sox really are surprisingly high on. You know, he was really thought of as almost a throw-in in that trade, but he's really impressed throughout his entire time in the organization. He has the ability to play other positions, though the Red Sox are seeing what they can do with him at catcher. Alex Cora repeatedly said they're really impressed with what he showed during spring training. Sox prospects has him as the number 25 prospect in the system. It seems like he's a guy that is going to be a big leaguer at some point too.
Yeah, they really like him. And, you know, there's Cora kept mentioning, you know, his ability to just slow the game down. And, you know, on the defensive side, they really like his defense. And he's a guy that I think he played mostly shortstop, you know, in college. He went to the University of Houston. And played a lot of shortstop and some different positions, and maybe some third base in there. I don't know, but he wasn't a full-time catcher. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so he didn't become a full-time catcher until he was drafted, and he's really, taken to catching well. I mean, he's really looks like a good, he could be a solid defensive catcher. He's doing the one knee down stance, which is the big thing in the Red Sox organization right now. I even saw Vasquez do it the other day. And, yep. And he's got a good arm. I mean, I think he threw out like, you know, 45-50%, maybe it was 52%, I think, of base stealers when at Double A in 2019. And so, he's got a good arm. He's got that ability, and he also hits for power, or I should just say extra base power. I mean, he's going to hit some home runs, but you know, he's got some pop. The thing that concerns me a little bit with him is the strikeout rate. You know, it was high. Strikeout rate was high at Double A, and it's been high at times throughout his minor league career. So, but I mean, that's just something with, you know, it seems like a lot of young hitters nowadays, you know, so he's just got to kind of control the strike zone, as Alex Cora would say. And, you know, he could be a very interesting guy that's, you know, is a starter or a backup to Christian Vasquez in the future.
And obviously it's early, but how do you think the Woo Sox will use him? Do you think he's the starter and Bandy and Harmon are backing up, or how do you see that playing out?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I guess he would get the majority of starts because they want to develop him. But, you know, they switch things off. Like, you know, they'll put these catchers in DH roles sometimes. And, you know, so they find it bats for you in the minor leagues for everybody. But, yeah, I'm sure he'll play it plenty. And I was actually surprised. I thought he'd start in Double A. And I guess there might be an opportunity that he would still go to Double A if,
you know, there is.
Starts. But, yeah, so I mean, they those other two catchers, obviously are, you know, long, as you said, they're long-term roster depth. If, you know, something happens to Vasquez or Pilecki, if there's any short-term thing where they just need a catcher for a couple of days up with the Red Sox, it's going to be Connor Wong.
Yep, right. And Ronaldo Hernandez also on the 40-man roster, prospect acquired from the Rays, but it seems like he's more likely to start at Double A. And again, this is just the alternate site roster as currently constructed. The Woo Sox roster when the season begins on May 4th might look a little bit different. A few of these guys can be switched around and maybe start in Portland. A couple guys could be added, but in general, these are the types of guys that will be coming through Polar Park this year. The infield, I think, is the most fascinating mix for this group. It's names that have had major league success. It's, and then obviously a top prospect in that list. So just, you know, running it down pretty quickly. Michael Chavis is there after not making the team. Geeter Downs, one of the top prospects in the system, is there. And most likely will start the year with the Woo Sox. Jonathan Araúz, who was with the Red Sox all of last year as a Rule 5 pick, and a guy and Jairo Munoz, who was a really good player for the Red Sox for about a week last year and then got hurt and didn't make the team again. But even on top of those guys, some interesting names, Josh Ockamy, a guy who's been in the organization forever, Chad De La Guerra, who you wrote about during spring training. It's a really deep and talented infield mix for a Triple A team, headlined obviously by Chavis and Down. So, you know, in terms of star power, I think if he is able to open the season there, having a guy like Michael Chavis, who Red Sox fans automatically know from the last 2 years, is a pretty big get for the Woo Sox.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, it is. And, you know, it should be interesting, you know, how he takes to that, how he acts at the alternate site. He was going to do a press conference, I guess, on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And so, but then he went on the taxi squad, so he didn't do it. So if he's, you know, doing press conferences and everything, he's got a good attitude, you know, wants to work on, you know, wants to work on the adjustments that he has to make, which are, you know, pitches up in the strike zone and different things and controlling the strike zone, both up and down. So, yeah. So, you know, I look at him and that obviously that'd be a fan favorite. Then you've got Araúz, who, you know, I look at this guy and what he did with the Red Sox last year when he played, he looked like he was a much better hitter. I know he's a good, you know, he was known more for his defense at first last year and coming in as a defender, you know, they said a major league ready defender, but you know, the bat it lags a little bit behind, but I saw a lot of potential with the bat. You know, he's a bigger guy physically, and, you know, he can hit. So, and he's still very young. And let's just remember that he only played like a half a season in Double A, right? Before, maybe not even. He played, you know, High A and Double A before the Red Sox got him in the Rule 5 draft.
Mm-hmm. And he's still 22, going to be 23 this year, and has a full season, or, you know, a full 60 game season of major league experience under his belt. 25 games last year for the Red Sox, hit 250 with a homer, 9 RBI, 644 OPS. I think that performance is better than anybody could have expected from him.
Yeah. And I think Renicki even admitted it, you know, down the line. They were playing him a lot when he was hot, and then they just stopped playing him because, you know, they had other guys that they wanted to get in there.
Right. They wanted to see Arroyo and Chavis. And
exactly. And then once that happened, you know, in this time, in the few starts that he did get, he didn't hit well, you know, which isn't a surprise. Right. And so, you know, I look at him as an interesting guy that could, you know, really could use a year of development in the minor leagues, you know, and could be an important, you know, versatile player for the Red Sox in the future. Downs is obviously the big name of this group. You know, he's got power. You know, he's a really good defender. He's potentially the second baseman of the future. That's, I think, how everybody views him right now, is that they, you know, they would like him to step into that role and do what, you know, Dustin Pedroia did, start that position long term for the Red Sox. You know, and then there's other guy, you know, Akemi's an interesting guy, hits, you know, tremendous against right-handed pitching, and he's a very likable guy. Everybody really loves him. And so he should be a guy that fans, you know, tend to like a lot. You know, he'll probably be very friendly with the fans and sign a lot of autographs. I hope Akemi doesn't hear this, because now he has to sign autographs.
Yeah. Well, it's not, first of all, it's not even allowed in the COVID era, but.
Oh yeah, that's true. All right.
Yeah. So now eventually he will.
But yeah, so I mean, he's a good guy that fans will like, and, you know, he's always smiling. Chad De La Guerra, another guy that, you know, he had like a 901 OPS for the Pawtucket Red Sox in 2019. So this is a guy that can hit, and he's older. This is going to be his final year before he hits minor league free agency. But he's a guy that really is a tough guy that, you know, has worked hard to get where he's at. So he's another guy that could be a fan favorite.
And as you said, Downs is the headliner there, and he's the headliner really of this projected roster. You're looking at Sox prospects, four of the top nine prospects in the system. That's Downs, Duran, who we'll get to in a second, Houck, and Siebold are projected for Worcester. And it's really four out of eight, because Bobby Dalbec still has prospect eligibility, according to them. And that's not going to last for long. And Mata's right in that list too, and he could be there at some point, as well as Thad Ward, who we won't get to, but I know is another Chris Smith favorite. Moving to the outfield, the final group we'll talk about, it's Jaron Duran and a lot of spare parts, obviously. But Michael Geddes, the guy you wrote about in spring training, Cesar Puello and Marcus Wilson. Puello has some major league experience. Marcus Wilson's acquired in the Blake Swihart trade. But this outfield group starts and ends with Duran. And I know we've talked about this before, but he's a guy that if you are in the Worcester area, you might want to try to see in May or June, because that might be your last chance.
Yeah, I mean, his speed is just so exciting right there. You know, that catches everybody's eyes, you know, right off the bat. And his success at Lowell and in High A and, you know, in Double A the past few years was built on, or the past, I think he was a 2018 draft pick. So in 2018, 2019, his success offensively was really, you know, predicated on speed and his ability to, you know, run out balls in the infield, get infield hits, turn doubles into, you know, singles into doubles into triples when he hit the ball to the outfield. Now he's added this power element, and they made some adjustments with his swing. They saw that this was a guy I talked to, you know, this guy that scouted him in college. And, you know, they always looked at this guy as somebody that could hit for power. They just needed to get him in the system and, you know, change up a few things with his swing, make a few tweaks. And you look at him, and so he's, you know, physically he's huge, right? He's the big guy. His father lifts a lot of weights. His father lifts weights. And so he gets that from his father. He works out like crazy. He's a workout machine, and you know, he's very athletic. So, you know, this is a guy that has the potential to, you know, hit for power, run for speed, and be an above average defensive center fielder. However, you know, that's the thing that they need to improve on too, right there, is you know, getting him on his reads, his routes, different things in the outfield. His defense isn't there yet. And, but his speed can make him an above average defender. And he was a second baseman in college. So like, you know, Connor Wong, he only became a full-time outfielder. He only actually became a full-time outfielder in 2019, because when he was with Lowell, he did, you know, play some second base. I think he started more games at second base than anything his first year in 2018. So, you know, this is a guy that just has been playing, you know, center field basically for a year, because there was no 2020 season. And, you know, he was really impressive in the Puerto Rican, final series, you know, hit for power, showed some good defense. So, yeah, I mean, he's the guy that everybody should want to go down and watch.
So Downs and Duran, those are the names to remember if you're trying to get to Polar Park early in this season. Obviously delayed a little bit, but by mid-May, the Woo Sox will be finally playing at their home at Polar Park. That's Chris Smith. We'll have plenty of Woo Sox and, of course, Red Sox coverage, because that's our main job coming throughout the season. That's been the Fenway Rundown.